have an evaluation training on Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. at KBOO Studios, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. This class teaches about the evaluation form and minute-per-minute form, music versus PA versus news program evaluation, and about objectivity and opinions relating to KBOO's mission, vision, programming charter. If you're interested, please RSVP by email to del@kboo.org. Again, that's Evaluating KBOO Programming, a training class taking place Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. here at your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Beautiful Party on Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. at The Know in Portland. The Beautiful Party is a video premiere hip-hop birthday event. There will also be performances, samples, and other surprises at this 21 and over event. Again, that's The Beautiful Party on Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. The time is 6 o'clock. Right to Survive Radio is coming up next.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Mike.
And I'm your co-host for this evening. I'm Lisa Fay. And I would like to go around the room and have our guests introduce one another or themselves. Shall we start to my right?
All right. My name is Nicole Hanabata.
I'm Safara Ochoa Hanabata.
I'm Trina Sutton.
I'm Sandra De La Rosa.
Okay, now, I know it was hard for me to make a transition from living on the streets and my habits that I developed on the streets to living in housing and share housing. So, let me see. I just asked a question and you all can answer. How hard was it for you all to get off the street and live in housing? What kind of transformation was that? Anyone?
I know when I got into housing, I still kept some of the habits of being on the streets, like packing my backpack full of just in case emergencies, in worst case scenario stuff. Also how I behave in my home. I make sure everything's locked. I make sure I have protection near my bed. Stuff like that.
I voluntarily became homeless. A woman said, how can you possibly advocate for the homeless if you don't know what it's like? So I got in my car and took my clothes, whatever I needed to survive out there. And I had a car, so I was one of the lucky ones. But I had had enough of it. It was so hard, and I just wasn't used to it. So I decided I was going to go back in. But by that time, the rents were so high, I couldn't afford to go back in. So I spent time at Right to Dream 2 with and learning from Ibrahim Mubarak and his wife, and learned more in a year than I had my previous 40-something years.
And I know our other two guests, you all didn't really live on the streets, but you lived in a van. And that's a big thing now, you know, the camping van for people living in their cars, their van, and their RVs. So how was that living in your van on the streets?
Well, it's very scary because at any given time, you can get your child taken away from you because of them not wanting the kids out on the street with the parents who are homeless. So that was scary and worrisome. And so as for protection, we had a pit bull. So that helped a lot from letting, you know, us know if there was anyone coming up. And it was a very scary situation or time for me because of her being only, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old. And so, yeah, there was a lot of worrisome. Now that I'm inside, there's less worry. But according to Safara, she actually did love that time we spent in the car, in the van. Okay. She loved it.
So can we hear from Safari to let us know how well you loved it?
Or what you remember.
Yeah, what you remember living.
I just being in the van, being able to, you know, like, drive anywhere and then just sleep and, you know, the place that you drove. Kind of like camping, you know, like a camping trip sort of thing, which I really liked about it. So, yeah.
So I remember interviewing you, 5 years ago, I think 4 years ago, and we was doing one on houseless school children. Yeah. And you made me put this quote on the show: when I get old, I'm gonna get rich and buy my mommy a house.
And I'm not I hope that either. Happens.
I hope I have children that'll buy me a house.
A big one.
Can we go around the room and start with Sandra? How long has it been since you got your housing, and are you still in the same place that you got housed into? And what are some of the things that you have brought with you from conditioning from being outside to the inside?
Well, I was first housed in 2013, September 13th, 2013. I remember the day. A person on Women's Crisis Line, she helped save my life, literally. She would speak to me every day and made me hang on, have hope. And finally, she connected me with Cascadia. They housed me downtown on, I won't say the location, the name of the apartments, but it was on 3rd and Everett. And yes, I was housed, but I ended up going to the hospital for psychosocial stressors. The environment was not very friendly. So I tried my best to get out of there, and I did. I ended up getting Social Security. I used my back check for Social Security to buy an RV. So 6 months later, I moved to Southeast Portland, 82nd and Flavelle, which was more violence, drug activity, prostitution. And I was getting ready to go back to being homeless because I felt safer when I was homeless because I knew where to hide. Whereas where I'm around an environment that's violent and you can't voice your concerns because then you lose the housing. So Cascadia heard about that I was going to go back to being homeless just for my own safety because the RV ended up not working and it was turning winter. So they found a grant and then they housed me. Again, I found an apartment in Southwest Portland, and that's where I've been since 2014, November 21st, 2014. See, I always remember the dates I'm housed. Some of the activities are things that I brought with me from being homeless is I lost my thought now.
What things you brought with you from being homeless to inside?
Yeah, I forgot it.
Okay,
I forgot.
You left it outside. You got swept, right? And they took it.
Well, I didn't notice that sometimes I've blocked my past. I've tried to forget about it. I know what it was. Washing clothes. My boyfriend always asked me, "How come you like to wash your clothes so much?" I like clean clothes. You know, because sometimes you have to, you know, you have to go days without being able to wash clothes and have to. It's hard to keep the look that you're not homeless, you know, and you have to travel a lot to go find a place where you can wash clothes, and so that's one of the things I brought that I still do, even though I'm not homeless, is I like to wash my clothes. I like clean clothes.
Good. I think everybody do. I like clean clothes. I like new clothes. Anybody want new clothes?
With the tags on them.
With the tags. That's another one. Don't give homeless people clothes with price tags on them. Okay. Trina.
Okay, I actually went back in. It's been maybe a couple years. I've lost track. I have a home. I have a housemate, and we have this three-bedroom with all the amenities, including a fireplace. And as far as taking anything with me, I think the only thing I took with me was guilt. I was sitting in front of the fireplace the other night, and I just kept thinking how cold the people are out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And I can get up and go use the bathroom. I can go wash my clothes. I can load a dishwasher. I can do all these things that most people take for granted. And you really had none of that. I mean, you couldn't even plug in a cell phone to recharge it. I mean, it was just... So I wanted to leave everything behind because it really was a rather dismal existence. However, I learned things that I could never learn any other way, and it was so beneficial to me. But I guess all I took back with me was some guilt that I have and other people do not have.
Okay. Now the van people. Can I call y'all the van people? I don't want to say Vanport because that's another story about Vanport. So I call you the van people. Okay. What habits or that you're still doing that you was doing while you was in the streets, or did you take anything from the street to being in house?
Just being safer, being cleaner, being
Now, while you was on the street, did you take it from the streets to house, being house? What habits?
No, not really. I try to get rid of all those bad habits when I moved in.
Okay. What about you, Safai?
No, not really, no habits. I just kind of, well, I kind of forgot a few things, uh-huh. so.
I know me that I still have to sleep with my window open so I can hear the sounds of the street, and it kind of comfort me because if it's too quiet, I'm thinking something's going on, you know, like we're in the forest and the crickets stop chirping at me, somebody's coming at me. So I got to hear that, see who's lurking around. I don't know if there's caution or paranoia as well. I bring that with me. Stephanie.
Sandra.
Sandra, I'm okay. So sorry.
I just remembered, like she was saying, what's your name again?
Safara.
I've basically forgotten everything also, but now I'm remembering. One of the things I did bring from being on the streets or homeless, I had to sell one of my cars to try not to become homeless, but I still did. Then I had a second car, and right now it needs to get fixed, but I've kept it over at a friend's house because I want to fix it, all because I fear, what if I lose my housing? I need my car so I can live in my car in case I lose housing, in case I become homeless again. So I still have that in the back of my mind.
So is that everybody's fear? Because I fear that too. What if I'm not able to go and do a speaking engagement and I don't get paid to pay my rent or to help my wife pay our rent? Is that fear, is that a constant fear with you all, that you might go back out there and you dread that because you know how terrible it was?
I do, because I still see it happening today. I have a friend who's been a longtime friend of mine. He had employment. He was retired. He just lost his significant other several months ago, and he can't get housing on his Social Security income. And I know you hear me right now, but it's a concern. And he went camping. He stays with me every now and then, but he went camping and came back to me and told me, there's a lot of people out there in the campgrounds have jobs, but they're homeless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I see it all around, and I'm always afraid maybe my Social Security will end, or I don't know. That's all it takes. It just takes not being able to pay your rent, loss in the family, hurricanes, fires. It can happen to anybody over anything.
This is Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, and we're here with Lisa Fay and Ibrahim Mubarak as co-hosts, and we have our topic is the transition from living on the street to living in house.
Will you walk into a restaurant strung out from the road, and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold? You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear them.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're here talking with individuals, beautiful, lovely ladies tonight that have all at one time experienced houselessness. And we're talking about the transitions that people experience once they are rehoused. And I want to start over on this side now, and I would like to know, how has your life changed since you've been back inside?
Well, we're definitely warmer. We can do a lot of things that we couldn't do in the van, of course. like just rest and sleep all night without having to worry about who's outside or who's looking in. A lot more safer indoors.
How's school now that you're indoors?
Yeah, that's something I want to know. Did your grades alter for the better? Did they stay the same? Or are you feeling accepted by your peers or anything?
No, I just feel like I'm there more.
Yeah. More present?
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, she missed a lot of school.
So how's her grades now?
They're going up. they're getting
we
better.
We're gonna come check. We're gonna put them on E on a sky ride.
She's working hard.
Trina.
Well, except for all the creature comforts, it's pretty much. It's not much different from me, because I went voluntarily on the outside living there. But
you have no idea how nice it is to be in a nice warm home and having just to turn on a faucet and getting water instead of having to find a place where they won't run you out just because you want to get a cup of water. And I saw that a lot. I'm just very thankful to be in. And when I look at snow, I just think about how I'm going to biff it out on the ice and not freeze to death.
Could you repeat the question again, Lisa?
How has your life changed since you've been indoors?
Well, I was in a wheelchair for 3 years. Once I was housed, I was able to go get a doctor, get my prescriptions that I needed. I rehabilitated myself. I'm now walking for the past 6 months with a cane. I'm involved with the community. I'm involved with the Health Services Advisory Council at Central City Concern. I lead a group there. I'm also on AMSAC, which is Adult Mental Substance Abuse Advisory Council. I'm on the subcommittee. I'm also getting ready to be on Transportation Advisory Committee. That's for the medical transport. And I'm also involved with Hunger Free Leadership Institute. So I've been able to rehabilitate myself, get involved with the community, use my voice to speak for those who can't speak for themselves, and that's my way of giving back and saying thank you for housing me.
So, this question, just because I'm feeding off of what you said, is everybody in here giving back to the houseless community because they know what it's like, and is it easier to do it? Why are you inside than outside?
I've always advocated, even mm-hmm. before I lost housing. Mm-hmm. But I feel now that everything that happened to me kind of maybe happened to me for a reason, because now I'm able to speak on those topics that most people refuse to look at, don't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people too. That wasn't my problem. Homelessness wasn't my problem. Drug and alcohol addiction wasn't my problem. Mental health wasn't my problem. You know, I was busy traveling the world and having a good life, and that's not my problem. And so everything happened to me, and then once it becomes your own problem, then it matters. And I'm finding that even though now I'm rehabilitated myself to walk, and I could go back to school. I was just telling Lisa this. I only have a semester left to be a 911 dispatcher, make good money, but I can't look the other way and act like this isn't going on, because it is. And there's a lot of people that don't have a voice, or they're not as outspoken as I am, or, you know, I'm not afraid to speak. And so I like to speak for those who can't speak for themselves or are afraid to. And so that's what I'm doing, is being a voice for everyone.
I was curious, because every once in a while, I still go by Sisters, or I still go by Blanche House, and just see if I recognize any faces, or maybe get a meal there. Not because I can't afford to go somewhere else and get a meal, but it's like I kind of miss the sense of camaraderie and like street family and relationships that I had developed when I was outside. Do any of you do that, or have stopped by to volunteer or lend your support?
I've gone by Right to Dream too and volunteered a couple times, because that is part of my success story. That's where I was able to sleep. You know, it wasn't indoors, but it was still safe, and I got to sleep. Still slept with one eye open, but I still got more sleep than if I was sleeping, you know, behind a building or something. Yeah, so I've volunteered a little here and there. And I also talk to people around the clinic that I run into, and I'm always referring them to resources, and I always give them my story. So if they're still on the streets, I give them hope. It's like, yeah, you could be going to Washington, D.C. or Salem or being on boards, you know, and I give them hope.
I used to live in downtown Portland, and that's where they congregate a lot of the time. And yes, of course, I would go up to them and ask if they need anything, you know, living right there so close to Park Blocks. I would just, you know, ask if they needed anything, or, you know, a meal or clothes or blankets. And yeah, I always find myself still wanting to help them out because I used to be there just like them. And yeah, anything I can do to help out is the best thing. I think everyone should try in doing that.
Well, I was a volunteer before I ever became houseless. I've been volunteering at Clackamas Service Center for about 6 years. And then I got involved with Bridgewalk, and I still go out on the trail several days a week. And in fact, I'm heading over to Central Oregon on the 20th of this month to work with the rainbow families that are living in the U.S. Forest. And, you know, they really, really have it bad. They don't have anything out there. So I am just really blessed to be able to do this. I believe that... I believe that God is the writer and I'm just the pencil.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And we're going to take a small music break. When we come back, we're going to see how the houseless children are helping people that may be, that was formerly housed, or the formerly housed is helping the houseless children to give them advice.
When it came to me, I couldn't believe what I heard him say. Sir, I wanna buy them shoes for my mama, please. Daddy says there's not much time. You see, she's been sick for quite a while. One or two look beautiful if mama.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And Safai, people waiting to hear from you. You was houseless, and you're in high school now. Are you in high school now, or you still in grade school?
Middle school.
Okay. Do you recognize or see any houseless children there? And if you do, do you give them any advice? Do you talk to them? Because you know, did anybody know you was houseless at that time? Was that too many questions? I could break it down. When you was houseless, did anyone know that you was living in y'all's van?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, and so you don't know the difference of the treatment you got?
I didn't think I got any. I mean, it was like, kindergarten.
Anybody agree? Yeah. Okay. Do you see or do you recognize any houseless children in your school you go to now? You don't have to give names.
I think. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. So you don't talk to them to try to say, it's okay, I was there, just keep being yourself and studying and getting good grades, and then maybe you can buy your parents a house?
She's too shy for all of that. I always try to encourage her to, you know, go up to, you know, the houseless children, because I know there are a lot of them. And, but she's so shy that it's kind of hard to, you know, express herself the way she would like to, okay, to try and help.
So this question I want to appeal to all of you all, because I have this huge problem. problem. You know how it is out in the streets. You know you get harassed by a lot of people. Do you have a problem with letting the people you camp with or the people you know that's on the street come visit you and stay for a couple of days? And
I've learned to set my boundaries, and it's because I've learned to care about myself. It's not that I'm ruthless, don't care about anybody. But if I can't take care of myself, I can't be doing the things I'm doing right now to help people on a larger scale. And I'm trying to help on a larger scale to make things smoother so there's less difficulty getting assistance, getting housing, getting food stamps, getting Social Security, make it streamlined, you know, for both the consumers and the agencies. But yeah, I set my boundaries. I tried to help a couple of people in the close vicinity, but it drains you, and then I'm not good to anybody if I'm all wiped out. So I've set boundaries.
See, I totally agree. I've had to set boundaries. When I leave the trails and any place else I would see our houseless brothers and sisters, I have to really go and find a soft place to fall because I can see them hurting, and so my home is my sanctuary.
Same here, but I did make a few mistakes in inviting those ones over, and I've gotten things stolen and stuff like that. But I mean, you learn your lessons, but boundaries is everything. And just trying to give somebody some money for a shower or, you know, even a sleeping bag. But yeah, you have to set your boundaries, but you can still help.
So have y'all ever called the police while you was in the streets? And if so, if not, you don't. And have you called the police when you live inside? And is it a different treatment from when you're living in the streets when the police come, or a different treatment when you're living inside when the police come?
Well, you try not to call the police just because of the situation you're in. And me having a five-year-old daughter living out of my van was not cool. And that was always the scary thing, is calling the police. You should feel secure. But the minute you do, they want all your information. They want to know what school she goes to, and they want to make sure she's getting to her school and classes and everything. And it's nerve-wracking. You know, even though you're not doing anything wrong, you still feel like a criminal.
I do see a difference. I've had to call the police when I was on the streets, and you automatically get judged that you're on the streets because you want to be, and it's like, no, I used to live your lifestyle. I'm on your side. I'm trying to get out of the situation, but they treat you like, they assume that you use drugs, or you're an alcoholic, or you're a dealer, or you're a prostitute, and you asked for this, and they really kind of dismiss you. And then as when you're living in a, depending on where you live, geographically, because I haven't had to call police in Southwest, but there has been police activity where I'm living because some people are not doing things they should be doing. But they do treat you differently in Southwest than they would in Southeast. Okay. And they treat you different in Southeast than they would treat you in downtown Portland.
Well, I'm from the Southeast, and I have a little bit of different dynamics with the police. They the ones that I know in the Southeast are very good people. And I did have to call the police. Our night watch actually called the police on a very predatory man who loved to harass. He was houseless, and he harassed houseless because they were easy targets. And we did have to call, and the police did respond, and this same man ended up with 60 years in prison for a terrible offense. But like when the smoke from the Gorge fire had just permeated the whole area, and the people living out in the tents were choking, and I got a hold of a friend of mine, and he called his sergeant. And the next thing we know, we have boxes of really nice masks to pass out to the people so they can breathe again.
Okay. I know a habit that I didn't call the police. I didn't. And now that I'm seeing some actions going on in the place I stay, I'm hesitant. I said, well, now I'm titled. I'm paying rent. I live here. Do I call the police or what? So I'm still restraining from calling the police. But I know a bad habit that I brought from the streets to my house is living out on the street, you're more vulnerable. And the way you sleep, you know, I'm still kind of crouching, then stretching out. And I wear a hat at night to cover up my head because it's still in my mind that somebody may come and kick me in my head or something. Do y'all carry those, like, things with you all? Those habits, those weird.
I have protection.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm going to say. She's going to say.
Women have different protection than men, folks. You heard it from here. Okay. Trina.
I never really was scared because I lived in a controlled situation at R2-D2. So and we had a lot of really good people there that would protect, you know, me or anybody else that needed it. You know, I've just never been terribly fearful out there. I just haven't seen anything, but I certainly know people that have.
Okay. Nicole, Safari, have y'all brought any habits in that you still do from sleeping in the van that you now inside?
It's kind of the same.
Kind of same.
Yeah.
Okay. Sleep is sleep, right?
Yeah.
Children don't care. They
well,
enjoy
when you're a kid.
I know when you're a kid. That's awesome. So what about you, Nicole? I mean, you couldn't cook. You couldn't, I don't know how y'all dressed in the van or took showers or whatever. So this is a different than sleeping in a tent, I suppose. Or is it the same? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either. But it's still hard. It's still difficult, but we always seem to like find people that had homes that let us shower and let us, you know, cook a meal if we needed to. But you know, it was definitely hard.
So you didn't
develop, not being able to cook and not being able to eat healthier and not being able to take all the proper vitamins and stuff that you need to take, you know. So yeah. It is hard.
When you see or hear people verbally abuse an unhoused person, do you intervene or say anything to stop the oppression now that you're housed?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
I definitely do.
I don't know what the question was.
Now that you have housing, when you see somebody make or hear comments about house people or directed at house people, do you step in and intervene to stop the oppression?
Yes, definitely.
Do all you all have a different outtake on houselessness now? I mean, none of us was houseless. But then we became houseless, and now we live inside. Do you have a different take on people, how you interact with them?
I still did get a little bit of PTSD from it. It's conflicting because these are the people I'm wanting to help, trying to help. But at the same time, I still get, I don't want to use the word triggered, but okay. I do get,
she used it anyway, didn't she?
But I've worked on it to where I realize I don't know what their story is. I got to remember that. Just like people didn't know what my story was. And so I don't judge them. I don't get mad at them. And my PTSD is getting better. And I'm not getting stimulated. I'm not getting overwhelmed or anxious, you know, because a lot of bad stuff happens out there, and that's what I meant by getting
by having that protection, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trina.
Well, a fellow advocate by the name of Mike Davis told me something one time. He said if houselessness resulted from being housed, then there would never be any houseless people, because you're born, you go into a house, you go to school, you go into a house. Maybe as an adult, you're living in a home. Something has made you houseless at that point. And it can happen to anyone. If it could happen to me, it can happen to anybody.
And that's true. I mean, you don't even know when it's going to happen, especially if it's coming from your own family members saying that you have to get out or else, you know, we're going to kick you out and we're going to have all your stuff ready in boxes. And so, yes, it's very, very hard.
So I think that seeing and developing certain alertnesses that you have when you live outside, and then moving inside, I notice that I tend to let my guard down because I feel safer. I feel more secure. I feel like I'm not going to have to worry about someone attacking me while I try to sleep. Or I know that being out in the elements is only temporary, because at some point during the day, I'm going to be able to close the doors to the elements. Oftentimes, though, I think about and I pray for our brothers and sisters that are still on the street, hoping that they find a warm, safe, dry place to lay their heads, that they can come out of the elements during the day, that they are able to access services. And it's very sad to me that there's so many people that just walk or drive by people that are houseless day after day after day, and they refuse to look them in the eye. They refuse to say hello. They hurry down the street as if they're afraid they're going to be touched or attacked, instead of you know, saying, you know, I made an extra sandwich today. Would you like my extra sandwich I made? A smile. Sometimes a smile when I was outside was very inviting, almost to a point where it would make my day in some instances. And I think that I want house people to remember that when they see people out on the street. The guy on the corner that you see every day, panhandling, you know, bring him a bottle of water tomorrow if you don't want to give him money, or a $5 coupon to get a meal at McDonald's or Taco Bell or something. You know, we take for granted being indoors, and these ladies here are perfect examples about how having been affected by houselessness personally are giving back to the community, and they're showing their love and support in multiple ways by being involved in multiple programs and remembering what they're doing, where they came from. Okay, we're going to take a music break, and when we come back, we're going to finish the last 15 minutes of our show.
So happy that you dropped in. Oh, hold your hands, they feel like
my mother will start to worry.
You can tell me what's not
happening. Your father will be pacing the floor.
Okay, you're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And we're sorry that the phones are not working this time, but hey, you can always go to the archives and listen to the show, or come down to Cable and say, hey, I want to listen to that Right to Survive show. So let's go back to transitioning from living on the streets to living inside. And the last question that Lisa had proposed or said, she talked about, was feeling safe inside. I find that I was more safer on the streets because it was community. It was people, like-minded people. They knew my possessions. They knew where I was. And we kind of know each other's habits. And we looked out for one another. In an apartment complex, we don't know each other. We may see them and say hi and bye. And people can sneak in your back door and do something while you're taking a shower or something. You know, you always hear about people coming home or asleep and it's a stranger in their house. But you don't find that intense because people say, hey, that's not yours. That's Ibrahim's place and stuff. So, again, let's talk about that safetiness. How you feel? Did you feel more safer on the street in the community, in a van, or safer in your apartment? Because I know in a van, anybody can come rock your van or break a window out or something. So who?
Well, and that's exactly what did happen. Gotten some things stolen as well. That is definitely scary. Thank God it didn't happen while we were in the van. But nonetheless, you still feel victimized by, you know, having to fix that. Well, actually, I couldn't fix it. I had to leave like a trash bag on that. So, yeah, you felt very like scared. I mean, now I don't have that extra window to keep me safe. It was always a worrisome situation.
I'd like to say that, yes, when I was on the streets, when I did get housed and I was put in downtown Portland, the housing situation there was, like I said, not a good environment. And I didn't have control there because if I spoke out, I would lose my housing. But yet when I was on the streets, I could speak up because, you know, don't touch that because that's mine. Or, you know, you took care of your dealings, you know, right then and there, nipped them in the bud. But when you have housing, you can't do that. And so I felt at times safer on the street because I could control the situation. But I did find when I no longer was in downtown housing or in Southeast housing, and Southwest housing has been the best. However, I let my guard down also, Lisa. I quit carrying this is an awful name, but I called it my homeless bag because I'm making fun of back when I was homeless. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I had everything in my backpack, toothbrush, toothpaste, comb, deodorant, soap, crackers, can of sardines, you know, everything, you know, a raincoat,
your
in
flask.
In case a nuclear war comes
out, right.
You
got your and I was carrying it around, and I'm like, I don't need to carry this around anymore. I'm living in Southwest, and everything's good. However, I went back to Southeast to make a sale of my RV. Forgot where I was, and I forgot where I was, and I realized, oh, I've been living it, having it good, that I kind of forgot about being aware and being prepared. And so now I'm thinking more, I'm going to go back to being prepared still. I mean, I've got it good, but it's still good to carry that bag because you never know when you're going to be stranded on the road. You know, you count on going home, but what if you get stranded on the road? It's good to have that little bag. So.
Well, where I'm living now, it's an extremely safe neighborhood. We haven't had a crime reported there in like 2 years.
Where you live, I need to come visit.
It's in Milwaukee, a great town. I know all my neighbors and all their pets. It's just, just wonderful there. But the only time I was terribly afraid was when I first became voluntarily homeless. And people think, well, you volunteered to do it, so therefore it can't be that bad. Well, yeah, it was. And I was in my car one night, parked in, looking down on some kind of river out of West Lynn. And the next thing I know, here's a West Lynn cop tapping on my window, scared me to death. It's about 2:30 in the morning. And then I noticed the way he treated anybody that was sleeping in their car. And I just thought, you know, I wasn't afraid of the people. I was more afraid of the local constabulary, at least in West Lynn.
So now that you're back inside, have you reconnected with family? And does family treat you differently now that you're inside compared to when you were outside?
Or friends?
I didn't let a lot of my, I didn't let anybody know that I was without home. I used to call it without home. Mm-hmm. I'm not homeless, I'm just without home. Mm-hmm. And now that they do know, because now I'm on Facebook saying I volunteer at Central City Concern and this is the reason why, uh-huh. They're like, they're kind of mad at me for not telling them. But, you know, I was ashamed that how can somebody who is living the life and then all of a sudden I'm without a penny, and I didn't want to be a burden to anybody. But yes, I've reconnected with friends and family.
Well, I never really had an issue with that. They did not like me dealing with houseless people because they were afraid I was going to get some type of disease or be mugged or something like that. That was their main concern. But my friends and those that I spend time with are mostly advocates and the people that are houseless. So they actually understand. At one point, when somebody found out I was in my car, they wanted to do a GoFundMe so I could get off the streets. And I said, no, I can't do that. I need to be here right now. But these are the people that will be there to help you if you are out in the streets.
Nicole, did you want to add anything?
No.
So how did your family treat you when you were living in a van, and how they treat you now that you're living inside? Or do they still hold grudges, or how your friends treat you?
Of course, okay. That's always going to be like that because of religious reasons. Yeah. But they've noticed the strength I've gained from what I've been through and my experience with Safara and not having her taken away as well, because that was a big thing for me, was that my family would always say, you know, if you do live on the streets, you're going to have your daughter taken away. And they would tell me some horrible things. And so I fought for my daughter, and we would just try all we could just to be good people on the streets. We didn't want no trouble. We didn't want no problems. We always stood really good.
So can you let us know, because a lot of people, families are living on the streets now. A lot of families are hiding because the fear of getting their children taken away. How crucial mentally is, can you explain? Because I can't fathom that. I mean, my daughter was taken away when she was 3 days old, but we wasn't on the street. I didn't have time to prepare for it. But you lived, I don't know how many years you was in your van with this fear. How was that on you mentally?
It was a lot of depression, a lot of panic attacks, a lot of anxiety, you know, when you're shopping for things. Just that worry of who's going to see me, you know, with my daughter in my car sleeping here. Like, you try to avoid all of that. And it is a very scary situation because it only just takes that one person to call, you know, social services on you. And I've already had that happen a couple of times, and it was scary. And but I never got her taken away. And it's stressful, very stressful. So now I'm not that stressed out about that. I don't have to worry about that no more.
So are you more of a social butterfly now that you can just stretch out and say, I don't give a care? I thought I was going to say something else, didn't you? But you said, I don't give a care. I'm going to say and do what I want to do or be the way I want to be.
You always still have to be cautious because my daughter's still only 12 years old. So, you know, when she's 18, that's a different story.
You told her. You said earlier that in the streets, living in a tent, you can complain and say, hey, that's not mine or this not right. But if you complain to your landlord or something, you fear getting put back out in the street. So is that something that's not compatible or comparable in the streets, but another fear or stress that you all face?
Yeah, I do tend not to make complaints at the apartments I'm at, even though it's a nicer place that I'm living in stuff.
But the ones before, whatever.
Well, it still has carried over to even the nice place, because you just reminded me. I'm like, wait a minute. I do hesitate on making complaints because I don't want it used against me. And then they start writing you up. And it's like, no, it's okay. Leaky faucet, that's okay. I don't want to go homeless. I don't want to lose my house over a leaky faucet.
Trina, do you face that?
I really don't. Like I say, I live in a house with a fence and all the things that you would see in Mayberry, you know, just home, home sweet
home.
You see
Opie?
Yeah. We don't have to deal with landlords who are, you never know when you're going to get an eviction for no cause at all. I don't have to deal with that. The home it's not a rental, it's ownership.
So do y'all find it less pressure and relaxing, or probably the same stress but different scenarios or different situations?
Well, you cannot trust everyone, especially inside. It doesn't matter if you're inside or outside. Mm-hmm. You still have your stresses. You still have people that are going to stab you in the back. Okay. And so, yeah, of course, you still have to be on your toes.
Okay. And one last question. Do you find the houseless people have more community than the people in apartments and houses?
I think it depends on the group of people you hang out with. Mm-hmm. I was not fortunate enough to find community out on the streets, except when I was at Right to Dream 2. Okay. And because I felt safe there because they were watching us while we slept. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was not fortunate enough to have friends when I was out on the street. So I didn't belong to a community. I kind of did belong to a community, but it was not of helping each other out. They were kind of not good.
Anybody else? Okay, we're running out of time, and we thank our guests. And if you want to know more about transitioning from the streets to housing, contact us at Right to Survive.
R2SPDX
at gmail.com, or call us at 503-839-9992. And it's an opening in the Montevilla Neighborhood Association. You go to Montevilla at PROTONMAIL.com. They have a warming shelter there. And also, Right to Survive have a TV show now on Open Signal. And our next show is going to be December 19th at 3 o'clock at the Open Signal, which was formerly Portland Community Media. And we have an audience there that can arrive and participate. We actually just come at 3 p.m. And the topic of the show is going to be 224 laws that criminalize houseless people. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our show. Come to our TV show this Tuesday, December 19th from 3 p.m. at Open Signal. Thank you.
Thank you.
I may be just a foolish dreamer, but I don't care. 'Cause I know my happiness is waiting out there somewhere. I'm searching for that silver lining, horizons that I've never seen. Oh, I'd like to take just a moment and dream my dream. Oh, dream my dream. Oh, stars at night. I'd like to know the taste of honey in my life, in my life. Well, I've shed so many pains, and I've played so many games.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock, and I hear someone out there loves Commodore's Zoom.